The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1 with All Care Pharmacy. Expert advice to keep the whole family healthy at All Care, the largest Irish-owned pharmacy brand.
Now, every Friday, we invite somebody into Studio 10 and ask them to guide us through the soundtrack to their lives. And today is the turn of Michael Murphy, psychoanalyst, author, former RTE newsreader and dream analyser. That's, have we got everything there?
I think that's a great
and
introduction.
Poet. And poet. And
poet. Poet. Thank you.
And husband to Terry.
Yes, that's true.
Yeah. Thanks so much for coming in.
I'm delighted to be here, Ray.
I was just thinking there as I said it, the dream analysis, we might throw it out there if we get a couple in before the end.
Sure, I'd be delighted if I can help.
Yeah, maybe. If you had a dream last night or during the week and you're perplexed by it, Michael might do the honours of analysing it for you before the end of the programme today. 5 on 5 on RadRTE.ie. So, you were born to Thomas and Susan in Castlebar in 1947.
That's it.
Home birth. Before it was called a home birth.
in the big bed at home, through the Green Castlebar on the Mall there. Yes, indeed.
And did you talk to your folks about that?
I did indeed. It was just after midday. My father was working. He was a pharmacist and he worked in the main street. And he got a phone call to say that I had arrived at about 12:05. And that I had a big head just like the Murphys, which is a fairly ambiguous thing to say. But that's where I first saw
the
light of day.
That's how you're welcomed into the world.
Yes, indeed. Yeah.
One of the big-headed Murphys. I can't imagine there were many phones in Castlebar in 1947.
No, there was one. I think ours was Castlebar 92, if I remember right.
So, not mad. Yeah. What did your mum do?
Yeah, my mum was a teacher. She was a music teacher first, and then she went on and opened the first wool shop on the other side of the Shannon. She ran a wool shop. It was the Wool Boutique. A lot of the country people refer to it as the Wool Boutique there on the Mall, you know. So she sold wool and sweaters and all of that sort of thing when I was growing up.
And where were you in the family?
I was the eldest. I was the eldest, which sets you up in a certain way. You have to look after the others.
And how many did you have to look after?
There were five boys in that family.
Okay.
Yeah, so I'd say it was tough on Mum looking back, you know.
And just because I'm fascinated by, you know, the dynamics of families.
Yes.
And the eldest, because in our family, the eldest was sort of quite relaxed.
Yeah.
But in a lot of families, the eldest is nearly like the health and safety officer. Which were you?
I would say they'd probably say health and safety.
I think they would.
You know, I hope I wasn't too harsh.
But I think that's dictated by the parents because you know it's the first child.
Yes,
and that's a lot of pressure.
Yeah,
and they desperately want to keep this person safe.
Yes. And but also to set up a good example for the others coming along behind.
Yeah,
you know, so. That's the position I was in. That was the role I had, essentially, I think.
And did you live over the pharmacy or...?
Oh, no. My father worked in the pharmacy, was in the main street. So we had a house. There's a huge green in the centre of Castlebar called the Mall. It was actually Lord Lucan's cricket pitch. So that was our front garden. We played on that in the summers and, you know.
Yeah.
With all the various dogs from the neighbourhood. I never had a dog as a kid, but we had Tatters Chambers crossing the courthouse and Lassie Mellet down with petrol pumps further down. So there were all these dogs. So we had great fun.
Yeah. So running around the green, your short trousers.
Yes, yeah. Indeed, yeah.
What is your first memory? It doesn't have to be a sound now. What?
First memory, I was in a high chair and my grandfather came in with some grapes. I had never seen grapes before, and he fed me some grapes from his greenhouse. So I would have had to be two, maybe. Mm-hmm. You know, that is the first memory. I remember that very vividly for some reason.
Yeah. And we some lovely sound clips here. You mentioned your mum was a music teacher, so we'll get to this one first and play this in, and you can tell us the significance of it after we play it. So that's the 12th Street Rag from Winifred
Ashwell. That's right. Yeah. We had a very, very large kitchen, and at the end of the kitchen was a piano. So It was in constant use. My mother would play constantly. She was a wonderful pianist. So that's one of the sounds I remember, 12th Street Rag from Winifred Attwell. Winifred Attwell had a show on Radio Luxembourg. And at 7 o'clock, there was Dan Dare, Pilot of the Future. I must have been between 5 and 6, and I used to listen to this religiously. It was a 15-minute show, and after that, Winifred Attwell would come on and play. So I learned all of the music that she played, and my mum played as well. So there, that's the soundtrack that brings me right back to Castlebar.
And that's wonderfully upbeat, that is, isn't it?
No, it is, yeah. Well, she played stride piano. She was a great
pianist. Stride piano is...
Yeah, it's the bass. It's a very jumpy bass, okay. Which you can hear
in that. Yeah.
So that's the sort of music she played.
She was a Trinidadian pianist.
Yes, that's
she enjoyed
right.
great popularity in Britain and Australia from the 1950s with a series of boogie-woogie and ragtime hits selling over 20 million records.
Yeah.
And she was the first black person to have a number one hit in the UK singles chart.
My goodness, that's it. Yeah.
Now, you mentioned Dan Dare, Pilot of the
Future.
Yes, so I'm going to cue it in. Here we go. Spaceships Away! It was a radio drama, wasn't it?
It was a radio drama about this spaceship and this pilot. He was a real hero of mine. It was really idealism, really. That's what I was listening to on the radio as a kid. I was fascinated by this, yeah.
And it was serialised, so it was... Join us next time.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah. The Folly or Uppers, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, the Folly or Uppers.
Yeah, yeah.
To be continued.
To be continued, yeah.
Yeah, because, you see, when I arrived at Radio Luxembourg, it was a pop music station.
Yeah.
So I didn't realise it had this former life.
Oh, it did, yeah. It was a really interesting radio station. Obviously, the pop, they did the Top 20 as well at about 11 o'clock at night, I think, on a Sunday night. And we really listened to Radio Luxembourg.
And radio is a huge part of your life. And you include a couple of poems in your new compilation.
Yeah.
Do you call it a compilation? Anthology?
It is, collected poems, the Ministry of Dreams.
Yeah, the Ministry of Dreams, which is in bookshops now.
Yeah.
And it's sort of autobiographical.
That's interesting. I suppose it is, yes. Yeah, I would agree with you.
You wrote it, Michael.
I never thought of it like that. But of course, it's coming out of your soul, essentially. So they're the poems.
There are bits in it, and we'll get to it later on, but there are very personal, intimate details in the poems in here.
There are. I know there's one there about Terry and his polio and that, which was very personal. I think he was a little worried about it. But... yes, and now that you say it that way, I of course it is.
It is, from
childhood right through.
What sort of child were you?
An aunt said that I was a very sunny child. I was a happy child, interested in music, and I did the usual things in those days with altar serving and singing in the choir. And so we had a very full life as children. It was a great place to grow up. You just remember the sunny days. I can remember there wasn't much traffic in those days, and the tar melting on the roads, and you'd get it all over your sandals, and we used to keep butter paper in a press so that you'd try and take the tar off the sandals.
And then did you ever get the magnifying glass and try and set something alight?
Yes, we did. Yes, we did indeed, And getting tadpoles in jam jars and putting holes
You're
in the
You're not allowed to do that anymore.
Are you not allowed
to
do that anymore?
No, it's not allowed. Health and safety. No, I think it's conservation of the frog population. Yeah. Now, in your biography, you remember you went on The Late Late Show and you told about your sexual abuse and all that, and you addressed that in one of the poems here.
Yeah.
I'm wondering, did that change it? Happened at an age... Around seven, was it?
Yes, around 7 years.
Because you're saying you were a happy-go-lucky, sunny disposition and all that.
Yes.
Did that make you a different Michael Murphy? Of course it did, but...
There's something I'd say about that. What I'd say is the world is always new to a child. A child is learning all the time. For instance, to open a door, you have to learn to twist the handle, for example, things like that. All these experiences that happened to me, I see it in terms of childhood. There was a council yard near us I'd be down there playing among the various machinery and all the rest of it. And they used to have these wonderful caravans. Obviously, the guys lived in those. So I was in there one day playing, and the next thing, one of the guys said, you know, come on, pretend that this is a lollipop.
And all right, okay,
that
right,
sort of
yes,
thing.
Yeah, yeah.
So when I left, he stood on the top step and he clenched his fist and he said, this is a secret, now you don't tell anyone. Mm. And I think that had more effect on me.
It was the secret, keeping
the
secret.
It was keeping the secret,
yes.
The terror of that, because I didn't know what was wrong, or, you know,
yeah.
But obviously something wrong had happened, you know. So I kept that secret. I never spoke about it. And when I...
But you got on with your life.
Oh, I got on with my life.
Yes.
I did, yeah.
With your
yeah.
sunny disposition.
You
and
so, yes,
yeah.
you get on with it. Yeah. Like, I mean, new experiences happen to children all the time. That was just another one, you know.
Yeah.
So I was lucky it didn't really distress me too much, you know.
Right.
Yeah.
So then, out of your sort of single figures and into your teen years, and I suppose in your teen years you begin to realise who you are, where you fit in the
as
world.
A person, yes.
And who did you think you were?
I was away in Newbridge at that stage, in boarding school. I went away at 12 years of age. And who was there in my time? Christy Moore.
Right.
Donal Lunny.
Ah.
I was in the same year as Dermot Wells, the horse trainer.
Yes.
You know, so I loved Kildare, actually, right? So
yeah.
I did, yeah. So it was a happy time. I got to learn to play the organ, studied art. There was a wonderful art teacher there, a guy called Father Henry Flanagan. So I was very lucky in Newbridge. Not so lucky in that I couldn't play rugby. I was absolutely amazed how people actually understood how to. Nobody had ever told me the rules.
Yeah.
So I can remember being on the pitch and it's snowing and the ball came towards me and one of the priests, for F's sake, Murphy, will you run? But where do you run to?
Yes.
Nobody told me, you know. So
pass it back, kick
pass
it forward.
It back, yeah,
kick it
pass
forward.
It back,
kiss
yeah,
it,
yeah. Pass it back. I learned soon enough.
Like yeah. Castlebar to Newbridge, it's a long way away from home at the age of 12.
It is a long way from home. Well, the Dominicans had been a tradition in the family. My granduncle my granduncles were in Newbridge, and my uncles were in Newbridge, so that's why we went.
How often did you get home?
Just for the holidays.
That's
yeah,
it?
Christmas and Easter. Yeah, that was it. And summer, yeah.
So September 1st then, you'd be there till...
you'd be there till...
The 20th of December.
September, that's it, yeah. So it was a long time. It
and
was a long time.
Were there visits?
Maybe one a year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I can't imagine that.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, our little girl has gone into secondary school. I can't imagine not seeing her for...
That length of time. Well, there were four others at home, so...
Yeah.
And my two other brothers came
lots
eventually.
Lots to do, lots
yeah.
to do. And music was in it. We played Winifred Atwell already, and let's play a bit of this.
On a day like today, we pass the time away, writing love.
Pat Boone.
The beautiful voice of Pat Boone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Great. That is summer days, the time of the carnival in Castlebar, when the carnival would come to town. That would be playing on the loudspeaker.
Yeah.
That's what I associate
on the tannoy.
With that. On the tannoy.
Yeah.
On the tannoy. And it used to be in the old military barracks in Castlebar. That's where they had the carnival. So you'd be walking up this huge avenue and you'd hear this on the tannoy. And so happy times.
I'm
again.
There.
Yeah.
I'm there. Yeah. You
yeah.
brought me back with Pat Boone and the carnival.
Yeah.
On the telly, what were you watching? Or can you remember getting the first telly?
I can remember the original Fugitive was a Richard Kimball.
Yes.
I remember watching that. That would be about mid-60s. Then the Monkees were later on, again later on, maybe about 66 or something like that.
Mm.
Hawaii 5-0, Book 'em Down.
Yeah, it ran from 1968 to 1980.
Right.
Jack Lord.
That's exactly
he portrayed
right, yeah.
Steve McGarrett.
That's it. Yeah,
and there's
well
that
done.
Brilliant scene in the opening animation or credits or whatever where he did the spin. He was on the balcony, he did a spin, didn't
yes,
he?
Yeah, yes, yeah. Yes, yes.
To camera.
Yeah. They were wonderful. They were innocent days. They were wonderful days. Yeah. You know, great to grow up to those.
Yeah, Hawaii 5-0.
5-0, yeah, series. Yeah.
This is, your sounds are brilliant. I don't know, there's something about them. They all fit together and there's lovely textures to them. This one, tell me about the Black Lagoon.
Ah, now, I can't... remember being allowed to go to films, but we did go to films. I can remember Errol Flynn and these swashbuckling yes. things. The Creature from the Black Lagoon was a film that absolutely terrified me. I saw it in the Fourpenny Rush, you know, this creature coming out, about to enter a room where the heroine was and all that sort of thing. And it was a big scaly thing, rather like an alligator. So I can remember being absolutely terrified.
Science couldn't explain it, but there it was, alive in the deep, deep waters of the Amazon. A throwback to a creature that had existed 100 million years ago, immensely strong and destructive. A woman's beauty, the bait that brought it out of its lair. In this most terrifying of the science fiction adventures.
The Black Lagoon.
And there was a place near the... There was an enormous mental hospital in Castlebar. And near that, there were hills and hollows in a field. And we always refer to it as the Black Lagoon.
The Black Lagoon, you know, right. Yeah. So Newbridge College then. and you came out of Newbridge College. And where did you go after that?
I was in the Dominicans for a while.
Yeah.
And
well, you were in the Dominicans.
Yeah, I was going to become a Dominican.
I was there for a while.
I was there, yeah. I did about 3 years. And then I went to UCD.
Why did you decide it wasn't for you?
The discipline was far too rigorous. I can remember, again, I had a good voice in those days. I was in the operas in Newbridge and all the rest of it. And I can remember reading in the refectory, the silence when you ate in the Dominicans at the time. And I made a mistake. I can remember it still. The word was ducats. And I referred to them as ducats. It was money, right, okay. Money at the time.
Right.
So what you did was at the end of that, you had to walk right up in front of everybody, lay prostrate on the ground, wait for the prior to actually touch you briefly and forgive you for having made that mistake.
Mm.
And, you know, this was just too much.
Right.
And again, there would be a silence at night. If you were down the bathroom and you met somebody as you were washing at night or whatever, you know, say hello, but you'd get penance for that
breaking
the
silence
and all
yes.
of that sort of thing. Look, hey, there's more to life than stuffing a mushroom, you know.
Because there's a poem in the book, Celibate yeah. Men in Dresses.
Yes.
Which is quite scathing.
Right, yeah.
About clerics.
Yeah. Celibate men in dresses have captured God, I think is yes. the opening line of it. Yeah, yeah. yeah. It is.
And you've written and you've talked about the fact that you're gay and you're married to Terry and that's
yeah.
all good. When did you realise you were gay?
Looking back, it was very early. It was very early. I think sometime after that abuse, I think, really. But I didn't do anything about it till my late 20s, early 30s.
I'm just wondering, was going into a celibate lifestyle, was that, you know...
With hindsight, maybe it was something...
Because it was a safe environment
to be. It
was a safe,
yes, and to protect myself from being so wrongly fixed inside. Again, with hindsight.
Yes, with hindsight.
With hindsight, yeah.
And of course, there'd be no pressure on you then to, you know, meet a girl, have a family,
none
of those things.
Yeah, so I'd say that was a percentage in there. But I think it was an idealistic move at the time. It was, certainly in those days, it would have been in the mid-60s, it was an expression of my idealism.
Yes.
I think so.
And seen as a badge of honour for your
yes,
family.
Yes, it's the heritage.
Yes, yeah. And everyone would have been saying, Michael's great, he's going into the Dominicans and we're all so proud. And
I don't know. I don't know what the parents thought of it, you know.
Right,
yeah,
okay.
I'm sure my father thought it was a big mistake.
Yeah.
He never said anything, but I would think so, yeah.
Okay. What was your relationship like with your dad?
better relationship with my mother. It was he was very strict with me when I was a kid. I got a good few beatings.
Did you?
Yeah, and I don't think I ever forgave that. I can remember after one particularly bad beating, I went up to my bed, took my pajamas, and went. My grandmother lived next door, and went next door and told her I was staying there from now on.
Yeah,
and she actually didn't send me back. With hindsight, maybe she should have.
And was she your dad's?
Yes, dad's mother.
Dad's mother, right.
Yeah. So she seemed to understand, and I stayed there from then on. Yeah.
That's a terrible thing, isn't it? Been beaten by your parent. I know what's happened. It was a different time.
You what happened. I was on a tricycle, and there were petrol pumps 2-3 doors down, and they in those days they had bottles of oil with silver foil on top, and I was weaving in and out on my tricycle, and I clipped the oil, and it spilled.
Accident. So,
an accident, okay, but I was terrified. I went up and I hid under a bed, and my father came home. I could hear him coming home in the evening, and he came up and he fished under the bed for me and brought me down and gave me a terrible beating.
Right.
And that was that. He needn't have done that.
No.
Yeah.
No. Catherine says, I have all Michael's books. I treasure them. This new book is gorgeous. He is fearless and shows great courage, humour and empathy. I'm so delighted for him, and he's just brilliant. And would you mind asking Michael, would he ever consider doing an audiobook reading? I miss his voice on the radio. He could read the alphabet and I'd be intrigued.
Oh, isn't that very kind?
Yeah.
Isn't it? Yeah, very supportive. Yeah, that's nice. Yeah, I'd love to do an audiobook, particularly of the poetry at some
Yes,
stage.
That's what I was it'd
be a good thing to do. Yeah.
Yeah.
Good idea.
Yeah. Dan Darren Digby, great memories. Thanks, says Joan and County Kilkenny. And remember hearing Winifred Atwell playing The Robin's Return.
That's another one. Well done, yeah.
We adored Winifred Atwell when we were young, says somebody else. Mike, you're going to stay with us. We have a quick commercial break to take and we'll talk a little bit more after that.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
51551 RayRTE.ie. We're speaking to Michael Murphy. His new collected poems is called The Ministry of Dreams, and he's talking us through the soundtrack to his life as well. We've got you up to just the whole news reading thing. How did that come about? You said it already that you knew you had a good voice.
Yes. Well, I won a scholarship to France where I studied psychoanalysis for the first time. And then I came back to Ireland, and there wasn't much call for psychoanalysts at the in the early 70s in Ireland. And saw an advertisement in the paper. They were looking for people to work in continuity and in the newsroom in RTE. So I joined at that time, and Pat Kenny was in my group, the two of us. So we were trained for about 6 months, and we went on. That programme was, the next programme is. And then they advertised for newscasters. I had to apply all over again, and I got the job in the newsroom. So that's how I got in there.
And you met Terry, because you're also a producer, were you?
I did about 10 years as senior producer-director
in
RTE.
And that's how you met your husband, Terry?
Yeah, I was working. I had a series called Access Community Television, and my researcher was Margaret Martin. She worked with Gay, but she also worked with me on that series. And we went up to the Rutland Centre to do a programme. It was an outside broadcast unit. We did 3 12-hour days. And Terry was there. Since you couldn't obviously film the clients, all the people who worked there sat in as a group therapy session, and Terry was leading it. So I watched this guy on television for three days. And television is like an X-ray. If you turn down the sound, particularly when a politician is on, you can really see into their soul. So I saw into the soul of this guy, and I said, that's a good guy. So afterwards, we had a little meal together, everybody who took part in the programme, and I made sure I was sitting beside him. So that's...
And how long are you together?
35 years. Yeah. So it's a good record. Yeah.
And you got married after the legislation was changed.
True. Yes. Yeah.
So maybe before we get to the dreams, you might read the final verse or stanza of that a poem for Terry. It's on page 73 there, if you don't mind.
On that laughing summer's day. On that laughing summer's day, the wind was cheering and the leaves on the trees were waving as we processed towards our future through O'Connell Street. Side by side, we laid our bouquet of roses out at the GPO. Acknowledge those who gave their lives so we could be cherished equally. proclaimed ourselves free, and free to become better together than either of us could choose to achieve on our own. And we withdrew relevance from those who disapproved of our new and mutual Republic of Love.
I love that line, withdrew relevance.
That's what you have to do.
That's cutting, isn't it?
It is indeed, yeah, it is.
You're not relevant anymore. Go away.
Go away. Forget about them.
Yeah. Right, thanks for that. So we said you were going to analyse a couple of, and we got loads in. We only have time for two.
Right.
So I'll do this one first. Hi, Michael Ray. I had a really upsetting dream that a doctor told me I needed to have my leg amputated. Any thoughts on what this means?
Well, if your leg was going to be amputated, you wouldn't have a leg to stand on.
That's
it. I kid you not. That's it. That's literally it. You ask yourself, what is the metaphor in this dream? So that's what it is. But it refers to her or his everyday life. What is going on at the moment where you feel you don't have a leg to stand on? And it might mean you have to prepare a reply or some response to that situation. That's why you had the dream. It's to alert you to what's coming on in the future. Yeah.
So deal with that, whatever it is.
Yeah.
I had the most unusual dream last week. Field of rabbits everywhere. I wasn't watching or reading anything to do with rabbits that day, night. I don't have a pet rabbit, so I'm totally mystified why I had a dream with rabbits.
That's a wonderful dream. That is fantastic. What do rabbits do?
A lot of things.
So that's why he or she had the dream about rabbits. There's something to do with sex in there.
Right.
You know,
breeding like rabbits.
Breeding like rabbits. Yeah. It's actually in the language, you know, breed like rabbits. Yeah. So that's essentially what the dream is about.
There you go. Yeah. Now, I can see that person at home blushing.
Well, at least they're not on television. So,
right. Yes.
The whole country doesn't know who they are.
So you have to ask yourself what's going on in your subconscious. Great.
Freud would say there's always something to do with sex in every single dream, but that's what it is,
I met Michael at a communications course. He gave me good advice. That's Sheila, and one of my favourite newsreaders, such a soothing voice. A gentleman, says Esther.
Oh, nice.
It's been great being in your company for the last half hour or so.
Thanks,
Michael, thank you very much. And The Ministry of Dreams is collected poems by Michael Murphy, which is in bookshops now.
And we have a show with Sienna Campbell of this parish on Wednesday evening next in Tralee at the Rose Hotel. So we'll be reading some poems.
So say that again, next Wednesday evening.
Next Wednesday evening in the Rose Hotel Tralee, Sienna Campbell and myself will be reading poems from this. A literary evening.
Thanks, Michael. Thank you very much.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.